time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
What the hell got into you guys? It's like you're all in the holiday spirit and everyone's getting nice.
Pete Thamel.
By far and away, the best part of that Drinkwitz clip isn't the actual thing. It's how proud he is of himself doing it.
With SI's Pat Forty.
It's certainly possible. It would be infuriating to a lot of people, myself likely included.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Oh, it's getting close now. Playoff shakedown, including the Columbus beatdown. I'm sure there's some records if I had looked them up, but that had to have been the worst performance by a rumored top 10 team in a a big win game. I think Pete had it best. We didn't even know that Mel Tucker might have a $95 million offer last week at the time. And Pete said, would you sign a big money deal now before you have to go play the Buckeyes? And we debated that. And I don't know. I can say this. If Mel Tucker was signing that deal in the middle of the second quarter on the sideline, I would not have blamed him.
There are a lot of DocuSign jokes on Twitter.
Yes,
had a lot of fun with the $95 million man.
Charlie Weiss jokes. I mean, it was everything. And I'd feel bad for Mel Tucker, but he's going to get $95 million. So,
if he doesn't, he gets 80.
Yeah.
And that's not bad either. If you're 16 and 14 and you get $80 million from a couple of Sparty billionaires, God bless you.
Yeah, I'm not going to feel bad. That's actually the problem with the only problem, I might add, maybe. More money, more problems, as the notorious one taught us. Once you get a $95 million contract offer, the expectations and needless to say, ramp up when they're saying you're the second highest paid coach. We talked about this before. I don't think if Michigan State thinks Mel Tucker's the guy and they want to keep him, they need to overpay to compensate for the other deficiencies in the program.
Yep.
In Matt Ishbia, their 41-year-old multi-billionaire former basketball player, they have a guy who, quite honestly, I believe would like to buy the Detroit Lions, but can't because the Ford family won't sell it. So what's the next best thing if you can't get into the NFL at this age is effectively own a college football team. So it's a very interesting
one. Daniel Snyder thinks the Ford family's on a really good run. So
yes. You win one playoff game in 62 years, like the 64 years, like the Lions have. I mean, the Fords are like, it's coming around. We tied just recently. Anyway, I'll be very interested to see what Matt Ishbia does with this program because he's got a lot of money. And I mean, what would you do when you're 41 with $5 billion? Like, it's like, hire a football coach or I won't. What? I mean, nothing matters. It's not a number. There's no number. People are like, how can they pay that much? Like, this doesn't exist. You understand when you have that much money, $95 million isn't really a big thing. So
it's like me buying you and Pat lunch.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's never done, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, come on now.
but he expensed it.
Look.
Yeah.
Michigan State is in position theoretically to have their Boone Pickens or their Phil Knight. You know?
Yeah. And except he's not like 80. He's not like 70 years old and like got my dying wish. He's like, I'm gonna be around for the next like 40 years. Yeah. Let's go. So
yeah. That's the thing. When you're Michigan State, you can't drive a hard bargain of, well, we'll pay you the market rate of somebody with your record. No, if you think that he's the guy, you do overpay to get him and keep him. And then that's the only way you keep away, whether it's LSU or anybody else. Hey, Florida now officially in the market. Does it work out? We'll see. Not a great first game after coming to that kind of deal, but
he hasn't signed it as far as we know. So,
well, true. No. Right.
He could still leave. True. I mean, but yeah, they have a chance to lose. Like, I mean, they could lose four of their last five. We'll put it that way. Like they lost to Purdue. Yeah. They got crushed by Ohio State. We'll see what Penn State brings, and then there's going to be a bowl game.
Yep.
It's indisputable, Mel Tucker, he's done a great job this year, right? Yes. To get them to this point, he's done an excellent job. So
unbelievable.
I don't think any of the criticism of what happened to Ohio State, that's just like talent gravity, right? Like Ohio State was actually, now, do you want to be a little more ready to play? Sure. Should you have some answers on defense? Probably. We argued about what metrics to gauge how bad their pass game was, and I won't bore everybody with that, but their pass defense was really bad. Like any way you statistically sliced it. And Ohio State's pass offense has gotten a lot better, you know, from week two to now. But Mel Tucker has holistically done an excellent job, because remember, he was handed rotten eggs for a roster, right? Like, I mean, that roster is bad. Mark D'Antonio had stopped recruiting. He had a bad staff. They had a bad recruiting department. They were sort of relying on point of attack and three stars developing to, you know, whatever. And everything just kind of, they had the slightest margin for error. And once they veered off track, it was pretty bleak there. So I think even if they lose to Penn State this weekend, I think any Michigan State fan would have giddily signed up for a Michigan win, and then that would put them at what, 9-3?
9-3, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like that's, you know.
Over-under was 4.5 wins by Vegas.
Yeah, yes. That's the thing. That was my point I was getting at there was that for them to even be 9-1 and rank that high and in that game tells you Mel Tucker did a phenomenal job. You know, there was no reason to believe going into the season that nobody was circling November 20th, Michigan State at Ohio State as a big game, because everybody assumed Michigan State would be 4-6 at that point instead of 9-1. So, you know, that's why they were paying the money to him, because they vastly overachieved. And this is a guy who has shown he can turn a roster quickly because of what he did in the transfer portal and go get guys and make their team better.
And we will see on recruiting. They are the 16th class right now. It has picked up since summer. If you look, he started landing some 4-stars in the last few months. The thing with Mel Tucker is he shows up late and he does not have deep ties to the Midwest, or, you know, he's like I think he was a grad assistant at Michigan State a long time ago. But in his recruiting, you know, then he gets to Michigan and then there's, you know, the beginning of COVID, which really locks him out of even meeting high school coaches and seeing prospects and, you know, just driving around the state like you normally would. And so, it's, you know, we'll see. He's going to have to improve recruiting dramatically at Michigan State if they're going to ever consistently beat Ohio State. But you sit there and say, well, you got 10 years. Well, you know, he's a very impressive guy. And so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So I wouldn't lay too much on it, but we'll see if he signs this deal or it still leaves. I don't know.
Yeah, but sure.
$95 million.
I think that hurt his market. Mm-hmm. I think if you're actually a Michigan State fan, you would have rather lost that way and kept Mel for a while and put him in position to sign the deal than lost by a field goal and at the buzzer and he's still in play at some other places. I've heard conflicting things on this, but I have a hard time picturing LSU taking Mel Tucker to the podium after just that tenor of loss, the notion that he could be spiraling here a little bit down the stretch. And I mean, look, like 9-3 is great. LSU fires 9-3 coaches. So I'm not saying his market's dead, but it's certainly that I try not to like overstate too much in one result. Like you should really look at these guys holistically, which is why I've said on this podcast a few times, like I think James Franklin is just a much more attractive candidate because he has something like 11 years as being a head coach. He's won the Big Ten. Like he's been in the SEC. Like there's just a lot more breadth of coaching experience that he has. So I try not to be the prisoner of the moment, but poof, that was a moment Saturday.
That was a bad one. That was a bad one. So we will see what goes down going forward. He also he could also end up 11-2, right? He could also. So sure, we don't want
to. He could also go to the NFL. Like that's very real. Right. Like exactly. The NFL does not have a deep candidate pool right now. There's been so much job churn in that league. I mean, think about some of the people they've trotted to podiums there in the NFL the past couple of years. You look at your buddy in Detroit. You look at Jim Thomasula. You kind of go all the way through. There's a lot of NFL hires who, like, the football fan hasn't really heard of. Nick Sirianni wasn't exactly a household name when he got hired this year. So that's where Mel Tucker's market could really be.
All right, one job that is open. I don't know if Mel Tucker would be a candidate or not, but or James Franklin or who, but is Florida. Incredible. September, I believe, 18th, they almost beat Alabama to move to like 3-0. And it was like, here we go. And a year ago, they gave Alabama the best game of anyone in the country. And basically 2 months later, he's gone. They lost to everybody, including Missouri, then got punked in the post game by Eli Drinkwitz, who showed up in a what was he? Was he Luke Skywalker? Was he Obi-Wan Kenobi? I don't know what he was.
Yeah, he was with the Force at least, as opposed to the Evil Empire.
Yeah, the Vader had
one of his
force.
Players had a lightsaber too. Like there was,
yeah, well, yeah,
it probably wasn't laying around the locker room. It seems like some premeditated trolling. Yeah.
A year ago, there was a brawl that I was very excited about. I think one of the participants I gave the Heisman to because he could really throw a punch. I really like that kid. I can't remember where he is. He transferred to Arkansas. I know that. But there was a brawl that got me excited. And then everyone blamed Dan Mullen. So Dan Mullen showed up at a press conference wearing a Darth Vader costume because he was the evil empire. And then after beating him, now we got this whole Star Wars thing.
It's Vader pretty accurate of him because the Death Star did blow up and they did lose. So
that is true.
Kind of is Darth Vader.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know what? Pride comes before the fall, and you really don't want to beat Vader because Vader dies. So I don't know what Dan Mullen really just. It's all there if we just pay a little more attention. It's a little more attention. It's all there.
Everybody's like, yeah, Missouri doesn't really fit in the SEC. Well, now they got a rivalry with a storyline. There's like 93 Star Wars episodes. Well, we just had episode 2 of Missouri, Florida.
But by far and away, the best part of that Drinkwitz clip isn't the actual thing. It's how proud he is of himself doing it. Like, he's definitely the guy who laughs hardest at his own jokes because he has this grin, just this Cheshire cat. You know what, eating grin that he just takes this big swig of his Diet Coke and he's like, I am so proud of myself. He could feel himself going viral in the moment.
He was like, am I gonna do it? I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna do it. It was hilarious.
And now we
are all for taunting. We are all for premeditated trolling. We are all for this sport being more interesting. And certainly,
we don't like sportsmanship. We don't like respect or sportsmanship. Mullen's gone. So look, we've talked a ton of Dan Mullen, bad recruiting, bad this, bad that, but mostly a terrific coach in the SEC. One bad year, he's gone, but it is a bad year. Question is who's coming? Who can Scott Strickland and the Gator boosters lure to come to Gainesville? Man, when it's rolling, it feels like the best job in the country. When it isn't, it doesn't. I don't know. To me, you have so much talent surrounding you. There's just no reason to not have great players. Need to be more into recruiting. But this is a school that's got two different coaches, and they've got three national titles combined. But the last three coaches were all fired. What are we hearing? Pete, you can start.
Well, I think we have the most fascinating coaching carousel showdown that I can recall in the, two decades of covering this. You have three consensus, no argument, top 10 jobs. You have a rapidly disintegrating pool with Mel Tucker. James Franklin's kind of saying he's staying now. He said that to some booster club in like Altoona this week. You're talking carousel when the Altoona booster club quote comes up. It's that and the beach house are like the two things that always emerge.
The ranch.
And yes, the ranch. Yeah, the ranch or beach house, whichever you choose. Or he fishes there, like if it's in the Pacific Northwest. Oh, he likes to fish in that river. When you really take a look at these three schools, their pools are small and they're overlapping. And I really feel like that's going to be the fascinating, chess pieces moving here is somebody is going to end up sitting on the floor when Musical Chairs ends. And I don't know if it's Mike Bone. I don't know if it's Scott Woodward. I don't know if it's Scott Strickland. And I think the worry of that happening is why Scott Strickland made this move Sunday as opposed to making it after the season, because he's basically actively giving Florida a really good chance to lose against Florida State, which is a big deal. Florida State's a big deal in the state of Florida. Even when they both stink, Florida State is showing some signs of life. Florida State, I wrote this Sunday, is in probably the best positioned Big Three school right now. And they lost to Jacksonville State, started 0-4, and need to win to wake a bowl game. And you could argue they actually have the best path of momentum to near relevancy. Now, this could all change with a hire and, does Anthony Richardson transfer? That's a huge question over Florida, because I feel like he's a once every 5 year kind of quarterback talent there. When you he allegedly like scrubbed Florida from his social media, which is
then brought it back. Like these social media stalkers. These stalkers. Stop following them on Snapchat and like, you know, what are you people doing? These are worse than the airplane guys.
The Cavs.
Yeah.
Remember when LeBron unfollowed the Cavs on like Instagram, and it was like a story.
Oh yeah,
LeBron unfollows the Cavs. If I had to, off the top of my head, do a Florida pool, it wouldn't be all that different than the other pools I would have to do. I would say they'd be interested in James Franklin. They'd be interested in Matt Campbell. They'd be interested in Luke Fickell, and then like Billy Napier levels on their on their B list. Do they ponder a coordinator, and do they go with like a Brent Venables, who's kind of been unmovable all these years, turned down interest from Auburn last year? You know, Dan Lanning all of a sudden like maybe comes into play. Like there are going to be names in this carousel that we never thought of that are going to end up being hot. Dave Clawson, Pat Narduzzi, even Jeff Hafley could end up on some B lists because of his NFL background and the Ohio State piece. Like there are high profile when you throw in Washington. I mean, Washington has made the college football playoff. Miami has won a national title this generation. TCU has played for the Rose Bowl. Yeah. And Virginia Tech, like these kids weren't born at that point, but Virginia Tech in our lifetimes here, yeah, played for the national title. So that A-list is going to be hot, and timing is going to play such a role in this. I maintain that if Cincinnati makes the playoff, Luke Fickell doesn't move, at least not until after the playoff's over, and you can't wait till December 31st if you're one of these big three hiring a coach. So when you do that, like Matt Campbell, his 7-5 burger he's about to swallow here, losing all these close games, may be the best thing to free him from that sweet Ames tap, because he will be able to like sit down and actually talk to these people and interview with these people and not have to do a backroom deal. And then these coaches who are actually playing in their conference title game could box them out a week. And we get a lot of like, I would never talk to someone while my team is preparing for a game. Like some of that stuff is going to be tested, right? Some of that like high and mighty, I'm dedicated to my team, because the market is going to be dictating, hey, talk to us or we're going to move on. We can't get left holding the bag. So if I had to do a Florida candidate pool, and I'd be curious, Pat, if yours overlaps with this, I would say Matt Campbell. I would say Luke Fickell, pending a loss, though. And I would say James Franklin with Billy Napier kind of there as the A-list of the Bs.
With somewhat, you know, just kind of my thoughts on probability, that sort of thing. A couple things to keep in mind. I think there are a lot of people outside of the Florida program, but with some interest in the Florida program, i.e. boosters, donors, who love the idea of Lane Kiffin. How does Lane Kiffin go together with Scott Strickland? A little bit oil and water. The other part of the equation there, the last two coaches, football coaches there, have been a little bit high maintenance pains in the ass. All right, Jim McElwain and Dan Mullen. Mullen's a great coach, but he was not the easiest guy for Scott Strickland to work with at Mississippi State. I'm not sure that changed at all at Florida. So do you want a third guy in Lane Kiffin who can be a handful, which Lane Kiffin, I think we're all pretty sure, would be a handful, but lighting up offenses, recruiter extraordinaire, would be able to come in and say, hey, I'm in the mix for Arch Manning. You want to transfer his interest from Ole Miss maybe to Florida? So I'm not sure that's a fit, but I think there are people at Florida who are intrigued by Lane Kiffin. Mike Gundy talked to Florida in 2017. That was in Ross Dellinger's story on that coaching search. Mike Gundy right now is on fire, mostly because his defensive coordinator's on fire, Jim Knowles at Oklahoma State. But he is 10-1 and going to be playing for possibly a Big 12 championship and or a college football playoff spot. Does he have renewed interest there? I don't think Strickland would go after a Mark Stoops, because Mark Stoops is Mitch Barnhart's guy. Scott Strickland owes a lot of his career to working under Mitch Barnhart. That would be a difficult one.
Now, no loyalty. SEC, no loyalty.
Well, I mean, eventually that's the way it goes in the SEC, right?
It's no like, loyalty. You know what?
Love you, Mitch, but I got to come try to take your coach. I think Dave Clawson would be the perfect Scott Strickland match. I just don't know whether the boosters are like, yeah, we want that guy, especially if they've already got their eyes on Lane Kiffin. And here's the other thing, too. Now, Strickland, I just wonder if he's lost some of his capital with the boosters after the Mullen thing blows up and they've had this women's basketball issue. And there's people saying, you know what, Scott, we'll make this decision for you, or else somebody else will make the decision because you're out. I'm not saying that's happening, but I just wonder where he stands in terms of his footing with the people that matter there. Obviously, yes, James Franklin. I go back to what I said on the last pod, I think it was, that if you're sure Luke Fickell is a 10-year success, you wait and you take one 6-week you know, recruiting punch to the gut, but you got to be sure you could get him. So I would reiterate that. Matt Campbell, I don't know, man. I mean, again, supposed to be the best team in school history. They're 6-5. Last year, disappointing. Year before that, I mean, he consistently wins more games than he loses at Iowa State, which is not easy. But what's he done in terms of winning big? Not enough for me if I'm the Florida or Florida booster to get me excited about that. Billy Napier, some real intrigue about him around the SEC. I think everybody just wonders, is the jump too big from Louisiana Lafayette to a Cadillac kind of job? The Dan Lanning piece is very interesting because he's a hell of a recruiter too. And what have we been talking about for a month now with Florida? Lack of recruiting success. But he's also a guy who's in his 30s and has never been a head coach. So I don't think there's an easy solution, but there's a lot of candidates and it's still a good job.
I wonder if Bob Stoops would come back for that.
Yeah. You know, he enjoyed his time in Gainesville.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, it's somebody's getting stuck with a coach that they don't, that nobody thinks is the guy they want. Like, and that happens. And you also don't know. You know, like one of the most surprising coaching jobs this year is Shane Beamer, South Carolina. Like,
yep,
he's done a good job. Who knew, right? Steve Sarkisian, total disaster. So, you know, who the heck knows? Texas was very excited about their hire a year ago. They're demonstrably worse than if they had not fired their coach. Someone is going to fire. Some of these guys are going to wish they go back to the old coach because this isn't easy.
Right.
This isn't. And you go, geez, maybe Dan Mullen with another year. We shouldn't have panicked so bad. I think
Mullen could end up with another job in this cycle.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
There's a lot of good on that resume. He's won at hard places. Like if you're Arizona State, can you just hire the hot Mountain West guy and look yourself in the eye and say, yes,
Brent Brennan is better
than Dan Mullen.
The second spin of this. So you talk about, let's say BC opens. No one's thinking Boston. Well, what if it opens? Well, heck, that's a great job for Dan Mullen, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good jobs. So there's just, I don't know. I don't know who they're getting, but it's going to be wild. Certainly out there as this goes. Florida should be better than this. Recruiting should be better at Florida, particularly when Miami and FSU are down, and there's no reason for it. But one bad year, man, and you are cooked. All right, let's get to this the results over the weekend and where we're at on this playoff, because it is opened up fairly obvious here. This is why the committee should not waste their time getting bashed and getting PR disasters by doing things like, is Michigan or Michigan State better? Guess what? Doesn't matter anymore. Glad you created an entire week of negativity that overshadowed the entire sport. Good job, playoff committee. Thank you. We needed that. But look, the story of the season has always been, one of the stories is, can Cincinnati get into this thing? For a non-Power 5 to get in, you pretty much need two of the three Power 5 leagues to just cannibalize themselves. And that's done. ACC is out. Now that Wake lost to Clemson, and Oregon is out, Pac-12 is out now that Oregon lost to Utah. The Big 12 could still cannibalize itself. So Cincinnati, in my opinion, will move up to 4 this week, as they should. That doesn't mean this is over for them. First off, they got a win at East Carolina, and then a very good Houston team that has to be killing itself that they got beat somehow by Texas Tech at the beginning of the year. They'd be right here too. That Cincinnati-Houston game might be something more of a playoff, but they do get the Houston. So we'll see. But Cincinnati wins out. This is, I have basically two results that can still get them bounced. Alabama defeats Georgia. Either Oklahoma State or Oklahoma wins out. Oklahoma would do it with a double bedlam. Oklahoma State would win Bedlam and then beat Baylor. I think if that happens and you have a 12-1 Big 12 champ and Alabama and two 12-1 SEC teams in Bama and Georgia, you will have an Alabama would be 1, Ohio State or Michigan would be 2, the Big 10 champ. Georgia would be 3, and I think Oklahoma or Oklahoma State would leap Cincinnati and get in there. What do you think? Would that happen or not? Pat?
Oh, it's entirely possible. It's certainly possible. It would be infuriating to a lot of people, myself likely included, because I just don't think the Big 12 teams, certainly Oklahoma, has done enough to merit.
But Oklahoma State, man. I mean, they got a three-point loss at Iowa State. That's it.
I know.
And they would have a win over Boise.
Their last drive was stopped by what looked like a pretty bad spot.
But Oklahoma State would have a win over Boise, which they got a lucky break there.
But
yeah, Boise, and yes, and it was 21-20 against a Boise State team that's okay. That doesn't do much for me.
No, it shouldn't. But it's not
Dan
the
loves
worst.
Boise, you know
it's
that.
Not the worst.
Dan loves Boise.
I love them. They could still win the Mountain West. No, I think they're going to lose. I think they'll be a 4-loss team, right? They're going to lose to San Diego State.
We're going to chat Mountain West division tiebreakers later, Dan.
Yeah.
Do the Broncos.
Boise still got a chance. They need they need UNLV to beat Air Force. I don't know what. I don't want to know. But you know how their analytics are all set up.
Oh, yeah.
Oklahoma State, it would be a very good team. It's a 12-1. This is a very good football team. I watched some of that game Saturday night. That's a dominating defense, and they will have every analytic advantage over UC. So just because Oklahoma State hasn't been ranked high enough, and again, this is where they're going to watch. They'll be like sixth or they'll be seventh. I don't know, whatever. They're going to move up now because the committee's looking at that going, oh no, look what we have to do and tell everyone what we're doing. And now we have to surprise them when we jump people. Again, stupid. Don't do this, but they're going to have all the analytics. They're sitting in there. They're going to be Oklahoma State over UC.
I mean, that would be it would be the debate. But I just think, look, Cincinnati, if you're 13-0 and you didn't lay the egg in Ames, you won every game on your schedule. You won convincingly at a 1-loss top 10 Notre Dame versus a team that beat Southwest Missouri, Tulsa, Boise State. Yeehaw. And then you go into the Big 12, which I don't think is very good. And, you would have beaten Oklahoma, big whoop. You would have beaten Baylor, that's your good win. Yeah, you would have beaten Baylor twice. Okay.
You just hate the mullet. You hate the mullet.
No, I don't hate the mullet, especially now that he's cut back the mullet.
It's kind of like a faux mullet right now. It's not really.
Yeah, now it's just kind of like a.
How about Holgers?
He just recommended him for the Florida job.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no.
How about Holgerson's mullet?
Talked to him in 2017.
He loves getting races from SEC teams. I will say that.
Yeah, because Tennessee's done
that. Still
now.
Bitter about the Tennessee one.
Yeah, Arkansas.
I think Tennessee got him two raises, if memory serves. Yeah.
How about Holgerson's mullet, which we will see in a tremendous clash. I mean, that just he gets balder, yet it just it recalibrates to the end. How does that work?
Well, that's the big compensation. The more you lose up here, the more you got to grow somewhere else, right?
But he's just out there letting it blow around that Texas air. Love it.
Man, mullet physics, baby. Mullet
he is
physics.
Bringing sexy back to college football. Pete, can you imagine Oklahoma State jumping Cincinnati?
I can imagine many scenarios for Cincinnati getting shafted because we have 2 years of empirical evidence of how eager the committee is to do it. So any situation you fly at me that gives them a chance to hurt Cincinnati, they should. Now, think about this. Cincinnati played a pretty good SMU team on Saturday afternoon, and they walloped SMU. I mean, I thought Sonny Dykes took the TCU job at halftime. I mean, SMU was terrible. It was sort of that reminder of what this Cincinnati team can be. They've got Maulers in the secondary. Kobe Bryant played his tail off, who's the corner opposite Sauce Gardner. Desmond Ridder looked as good as he's looked all season. There were deep balls open everywhere, and they are designed in a lot of ways, Cincinnati, with the really elite secondary, to play more of these wide-open AAC teams. Part of what's happened to Cincinnati the past couple weeks is that teams just basically ditched their offenses and ran gadget offenses to shorten the game and keep things close, and it worked. When I was there a couple weeks ago, Mike Tressel, the defensive coordinator, told me that they went like four consecutive weeks without actually seeing the teams, the offense the team normally played. They played a different offense in an effort to gum up the game. And that's what happens when you dominate a league, and that's what happens when your defense is that good. You're going to do that. So SMU clearly just went out and ran things full tilt, and they pounded them. So I really feel like for Cincinnati, they have some separation and some air from the they're not playing that well phase of their schedule. And look, Houston's 8-0 in the AAC. I don't know how they're going to determine home field in that game, to be honest, because they will have not played each other. Do you know, is there some weird tiebreaker?
Come on. I think it might be higher playoff ranking. Perhaps I should look that up before.
Somebody look up the bylaws, please, here. Yes.
But that's a legit game, and
they're 10-1. And they got UConn. Yeah. They're going to be 11-1. No disrespect, UConn.
As Yeah, as important as where, the Lou Spanos era, go with a bang. As important as where Cincinnati is this week, it's really going to be important where Houston is. Because if Houston's 18, that's a really good win. That's not that different than a win over where Baylor's right. A little higher. But like that's like in the same neighborhood, 10 to 20, as where those Big 12 teams will be. I'm not saying Houston's as good as Baylor or anything like that. But like, yeah, I think that just don't underestimate the committee's desire to reward the fat cat. That's just, we've just seen it time and time again. We saw it with UCF. We've seen this play before, and we've heard Mike Oresko complain about it before. Like, it's just, it's the same cycle. Like, it almost has gotten like tedious and boring in a lot of ways. Just it's like, oh, what, the committee shafted the team from outside the power leagues. What a surprise. They're mad about it. What a surprise. Like, it's sort of, this playoff cycle has kind of hit that, like, just generally speaking, from 30,000 feet, that like eye roll predictability phase.
Here's the deal: if the two teams did not play but have the same record in conference, the team with the higher CFP ranking will host. So Cincinnati is in line to host.
All right, there you go.
All right, here's the other one that is very interesting. It's like that Undertaker highlight where he just pops out of the coffin at one of the WrestleManias. Notre Dame ain't dead yet. Not only that, I'll give you, this is all that has to happen, okay? Georgia defeats Alabama decisively. Well, first off, Cincinnati loses, and Notre Dame's now in the catbird seat, probably. Yep. They can only get jumped by the Oklahoma State thing. Now they got a little bit better. But Georgia defeats Alabama decisively and takes the Tide out as a two-loss team, and because no one's going to want to watch Georgia and Alabama then play again. And then the Bedlam winner, either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, then loses in the Big 12 title game, and or whoever wins Michigan and Ohio State loses in the Big 10 title game, which again, Wisconsin, who knows, or Cincinnati loses. Like, you could very easily have Georgia, Ohio State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. That could be your four. There is nobody left. Like, everybody's lost. You would at that point have to say two-loss Bama, like the two-loss like Michigan, like three-loss Wisconsin. Like, it'd be very hard to find anybody who deserves it over Notre Dame. There's just no one-loss teams at that point. So the Irish, of all people, dead and buried for a long time, for good reason, by the way, are back.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are absolutely scenarios and paths for them to get there. And the hilarious thing is, you know, while a lot of the country and certainly part of the selection committee wants to denigrate Cincinnati, Notre Dame say, hey, we got a good loss. We lost to that Cincinnati team, you know, where everybody else said, oh, Cincinnati's no good. They would get killed. But yeah, you know what? And yeah, the blowout of Wisconsin, which wasn't really a blowout. I was there in Soldier Field. That was like three interceptions in the fourth quarter, two of which were pick sixes late to make that look 41-13. It was, you know, that was a slog that was 20-13 until the end. But it's still, they won
You're
the
still
game.
Angry and now we're about having to watch that game, aren't you?
Yeah, it was grotesque. It was awful. But that, I give credit again to Notre Dame, to the coaching staff for what they have done since then. In that first month in September when they looked god awful. And then they got dominated at home by Cincinnati. And all they've done since then is win all their games. And now they've won the last three in blowout fashion. You know, you blow out Navy. Okay, fine. Blow out Virginia on the road. That's impressive. Now, Georgia Tech, have they quit? Are they going to get Jeff Collins fired for that? Maybe. And then Stanford's badly in the tank at the end as well. But, you know, Marcus Freeman was hired to replace Clark Lee. Clark Lee was a rock star defensive coordinator. Freeman's come in. The last three games, they have allowed 6, 3, and 0 points. And they're probably going to hold Stanford to a touchdown or less, I would say, at the end, too. So, phenomenal hire there. I said at the time that Notre Dame has kind of gotten to that stature of, to a little bit of like Alabama, where, okay, we need a coordinator. We're going to go get a top shelf one. And you get Marcus Freeman from Cincinnati. Bring him in. Plug him in. He's doing great work. Tommy Reese is doing very well with the offense, which was just horrible early on, and here we are with Notre Dame, and people will lose their minds if Notre Dame's in there again, especially if they're like a number four seed and they're going up against Georgia and they're going to be a 3-touchdown underdog, and oh, we can't wait to see Notre Dame lose like this again. Well, hey, it's not out of the question.
Who else do you pick, though? You know,
right? That's the thing.
Marcus Freeman's going to be on that coaching carousel too. You watch, this thing's going to spin deep down.
He's
to
done
him,
good
yeah.
work, man. He's done good work. What a great decision he made not going to LSU.
Oh, my gosh.
And then going to South Bend. Like, talk about, like, pivot points of your career where
tens of millions of dollars he just made on that one move. Oh, of course, yeah. They may not have been that bad at LSU if he had gone there, but that thing was sinking. The ship be sinking.
Kind of like my we come and comment in the race of the case. We are not coming.
Not coming. No, not going.
We are going going the way of Coach.
How did we do this week? How did everybody do?
Yeah, you won the week again, Pete, and pretty much wrapped the damn thing up.
We're not going to have magic number trash talk time?
No. We do not concede anything. We concede
no magic
nothing.
Numbers?
Concede nothing. He could not win again. We could easily catch him. It's 12 picks left. And he's only up 8 on me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. All right, I got a people's court for you guys. A quick one. People's court. I know there's a lot of results to get to, but the people's court, this has to get figured out. It comes from a place known for its fair and equitable judicial system, Jiangsha, China. Jiangsha, China, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but a dispute's a dispute. We need the people's court. So in China right now, it is apparently popular for competitive eaters to go to a restaurant and then live stream on the internet themselves eating as much food as they can as an audience tunes in. Now, I'd say there's nothing to clearly watch in China, but I watch Maction, so who the hell am I to look down on all these people? But
you know, yeah. I'm not sure American viewing tastes can hold themselves up over anybody, you know?
Anyway, there is a fairly popular personality. He is known as Mr. Kang. Mr. Kang, that's what he's known as. And Mr. Kang went to the Handati Seafood Barbecue Buffet in Jiangsha, I don't know, who offers, this is a fateful decision, the all-you-can-eat grill buffet. I think you can see where this is headed, right?
Oh boy.
All you can eat. So he goes in one time, he ate 3.3 pounds of pork trotters, which are pig's feet.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Kang.
3.3 pounds of pig's feet.
Mr. Kang took it down. He came back another time and he got after the prawns. The prawns are popular at the Handati. Everyone knows that. You go to Handati Barbecue Buffet in Jiangsha, China, you get the prawns. He ate 8.8 pounds of prawns.
What?
Yes. So the proprietor of the Handati Seafood Barbecue Buffet immediately banned him from ever walking in the restaurant again. Mr. Kang is protesting and arguing a human rights violation of all things, of all the human rights being violated in China right now. Mr. Kang said, according to the BBC, the restaurant is discriminatory, quote unquote, against people who can eat a lot. I can eat a lot. Is that a fault? He said, adding he just didn't want to waste any of the food.
Is this the Chinese Homer Simpson?
Like, maybe. The restaurant
there's a famous
owner.
Simpsons where he goes to an all you can eat seafood restaurant.
Sure does. It's everything's in the Simpsons, right? It's all preordained. This guy says the owner said every time he comes in, I lose a few hundred won. Even when he drinks soy milk, he can drink 20 or 30 bottles. When he eats the pork trotters, he consumes the whole tray. As for the prawns, usually people use tongs to pick them up. He takes the tray and just takes all of them. So, people's court. Pat, who is right and who is wrong here? The owner of the seafood buffet for saying, hell no, I can't give you truly all you can eat if you're a professional eater. Or Mr. Kang, or just simply pointing to the sign. Pat 40, your thoughts. Justice 40.
Oh, I'm 100% on the side of Mr. Kang and his human rights here. I mean, look.
Call Amnesty International.
If it says all you can eat, let the man eat. Get out of the way. The only option that you have if you're the owner is you see Mr. Kang coming and you switch the sign to make it like instead of 29.99 won, you make it 400 won and you make your money back there, you know. But otherwise, no. If that's the rules, he's playing by the rules. His human rights have been violated, Dan. Set the man free. Let him eat.
Yeah, I hate to agree with Justice 40, but I think we would have the same opinion in the high court on this. You run a buffet. There's risks when you run a buffet, right? Just like you run some fancy French food restaurant where your entree is the size of a thimble, you run the risk of no one wanting to eat there. Well, you run a buffet, you run the risk of someone wanting to eat too much And that is clearly, they've clearly met their match. They've met their foil. And you need to adjust your business plan. You just can't eliminate Mr. Kang.
I mean, I think Mr. Kang's got a legal argument, but I'm just going to say this. I think this guy's a total asshole. I think Mr. Kang. Mr.
Why?
Kang.
Because he's hungry?
8.8 pounds. This guy, I don't think the Handati seafood, like at some point, you just got to be polite. He'd be like, I'm not going to bury this dude and like put his children out in the streets and stuff like that. Well, just because I want to show off on my little webcast. So I think there's a if you have the ability to eat that many prawns, you have the responsibility. With great ability comes responsibility. You have the responsibility to be a little bit better of a citizen. I think, Mr. Kang, you win the legal argument, but I think you're in it. If I see Mr. Kang coming, we're not going to be friends. I'm not going to be friends with him. I'm not sitting down eating pork trotters.
And you're usually so friendly with everybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't like Mr. Kang. I don't like Mr. Kang.
What Mr. Kang should do is like diversify. If there are other all-you-can-eat buffets, you hit one per month or whatever instead of just going back to the same one and drilling the same guy.
I don't know.
Hey, man, you like the prawns? You like the prawns. Sully, we need audio interspersed on the pod of Mr. Kang from his live streams. Can you handle that, Sully?
Check
sure, that'd be easy to find.
I'm not tracking this guy down. He's an asshole.
Thank you, Sully. Thank you. Sully did good work on this. The last time Florida had two wins in the SEC was in 1986. He made a list of things that happened that year. Sully was not alive. Okay, thanks for bragging about how young you are. Galen Hall was in his third year. Steve Spurrier wouldn't coach for another three seasons. Okay. Gas was under a dollar. Top Gun was number one at the box office. All right. No need for speed. That's what Friends Are For from the super team of Dionne Warwick, Stevie Wonder, Elton John, and Gladys Knight was number one on the billboards.
Oh, yeah, we play that at the end of every podcast in a moment of solidarity, just so our listeners know. Yeah. Once we go off the air, we just have a big, big duet.
I forgot about that song. God,
that was a terrible song.
Yeah, rough year for the billboard charts.
VHS versus Betamax was still a debate in the 40 household. Wow, he's putting he's slamming.
I'll tell you what, was in the 40 household, Missouri. I was a senior at Missouri, and we were going 3-8, and I was writing about Oklahoma 77, Missouri 0. That was 1986.
All right. If you put $100 in the S&P 500, you'd now have $4,673. 74, I'm sorry. That's all right. So there you go. All right. Final piece here before we get to the handing out the Heisman. Animal attacks. We haven't stopped paying attention. Hong Kong authorities have had enough of the wild boars. There's a wild boar problem in Hong Kong. Increasing number of attacks. Very Asian centric. This a lot of Asian stories today, right? Coming out of Asia. It's really where it's all happening. Increasing number of attacks by the animals, including one that bit a police officer, triggered an operation Wednesday night in the district less than half an hour. They used dart guns to capture seven wild boars, who were later put down. Wild boars are a common sight along Hong Kong hiking trails, and they have started to move into the city. A large group of wild pigs continue to wander and gather at the site, posing threats to members of the public and road users. One boar knocked down a cop. This is a problem. This is a problem.
Well, it sounds distinctly problematic to me if they are traveling in gangs. If there's a gang of seven of them that they had to put down. I mean, look out. That's a lot of boar. You could feed a lot of people, but still, that's a lot of boar coming at you if you're some innocent citizen there, you know, minding your own business, doing whatever you do in Hong Kong, and here they come. Here comes the boar gang.
Not good. Not good. All right, let's hand out the small sample Heisman because we don't like to wait till the end of the year to give our Heismans.
Hello, record book.
Hello, small sample Heisman.
How about that?
Yeah, I'm going to give it to the hero of the return. 23-year-old Kenny Pickett, Pitt's 50-year senior quarterback, is one step from finishing the job. He threw four touchdowns, and he threw for 340 yards as Pitt pasted Virginia. 48-38 wasn't really a pasting. They kind of outlasted them. Pitt has won the Coastal. It will likely face Wake Forest or potentially have a rematch with Clemson in the ACC title game, depending on results this weekend. But Hats off to Kenny Pickett. He said he returned back to Pitt to bring an ACC championship. Pitt has never won the ACC, although it hasn't been there that long. Yeah, it'd be a really, really fun story if Kenny Pickett and his merry band of well-fed offensive linemen can finish the job in Pittsburgh.
Good one.
And Tim Salem will drink all the Mountain Dew in the locker room after. He'll just, like, pour it over himself. He'll even let it fizz.
I'm going to go with another quarterback who was involved in the most aesthetically pleasing rivalry of them all, even if it's not very good football these days. USC and UCLA, where they both wear their home uniforms. And Sissy Blue, as Ed Orgeron dubbed it at the beginning of the season, rolled over USC 62-33. Quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson, 349 yards passing, 4 TDs, a passer rating of 247.81. That's a career high. He also ran for 2 touchdowns, and he made himself quite a viral moment by, after one of his scores, grabbing a hat and autographing it in the end zone or right outside the end zone after he scored, drawing a 15-yard penalty and making the penalty moot by scoring so many touchdowns it didn't matter, the 15 yards. So then afterwards, Dorian Thompson-Robinson got a picture with the young man. Got a picture taken with the USC fan who had a UCLA hat and maybe converted him to Sissy Blue and the Bruins. So good job, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Small sample Heisman winner.
All right, I'm going to give a team award here. Sorry, I know it's an individual award. I guess I can pick somebody. I'll take Cole Bishop. Any of these Utah defenders. Cole had 7 total tackles, 5 solo, 1 tackle for a loss. Could have been Zamaya Vaughn. It could have been Devin Lloyd. Could have been anybody. Absolutely annihilated Oregon. Held the number 3 team in the country to 7 points. Huge night in Salt Lake City. Incredible atmosphere. One of the almost expected performances. They were the favorites. It was not an upset. Oregon had been injured and banged up. They had the great win over Ohio State, but since then, they were getting held together by duct tape, and the Utah, particularly their defense, just absolutely ripped them apart and changed the course of the Pac-12 race and the national playoff. But regardless of that, great night for the Utah Utes. Congratulations to that defense, which just dominated that football game. So you all get my, we'll send a whole bunch of Heismans out there. We don't give anybody anything, of course, on the show because budget. Plus, that would like take effort. We're not doing
that. That's the biggest thing, really.
Yeah. Someone had to box it up and send it. Nah, that's just, yeah.
We'd have to think and be thoughtful, which doesn't really, that's not our deal.
All right, we said a lot of mean things on the podcast. I'm wondering whether we can say anything nice. This is the weekly challenge. Can somebody say something nice? How about you, Pat? Can you say something nice? Really?
Yes, right. Yes. I'm going to say something nice about 2 freshman quarterbacks who stepped into difficult situations, had some struggles early, and now are absolutely lighting up their conferences. And I'm talking about Bryce Young of Alabama and C.J. Stroud of Ohio State. If you go back at the beginning, I mean, Bryce Young has to walk in, replace Mac Jones, who's doing very well in the NFL. Stroud has to replace Justin Fields, who's making his own impact in the NFL, albeit a little more slowly. Early on, like in the first few weeks, people are like, oh, I don't know. Are these guys up to the level of quarterback play we're used to seeing here? And now the answer is, oh, yes. Yes, they are. C.J. Stroud in that utter annihilation of Michigan State, 432 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. His last 2 games, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. Bryce Young, Alabama record 559 passing yards and 5 touchdowns against Arkansas, and they needed it because the defense didn't do a very good job of stopping the Razorbacks. So these two guys, who could both end up in the playoff, who knows, maybe even playing against each other, we'll see. But they have rounded into form very, very nicely and showed why their coaches were so high on them and why they got the jobs to begin with.
You know what? I'm going to say something nice about Desmond Ridder. I saw him walking on the field at Cincinnati on TV on Saturday. He's holding his 1-year-old daughter who's about 1 year old. You know, he went to Cincinnati. He redshirted. He got better for 4 years. He returned. He's won 40 games. And he may get one more home game here in the AAC title game. But I just really thought, man, that's college football right there. You got a kid from Louisville, shows up so skinny. They call him the Calvin Klein model. He builds, he grows, he develops every year. He could well leave as a first, second round pick. And he literally helps pull the program from the AAC to the Big 12, like, I was just like, man, that's pretty cool. And he literally, among those 5 years, not only does it all that on the field, but he also starts a family. And one of the reasons he stayed is for his family. I just thought it was an awesome scene. Like, there were so many great senior day moments, and there are and will be in upcoming weeks. And I just really thought that one hit my heart a little bit. So, Desmond Ritter, congratulations. Not too many college athletes can say they've had the impact on their individual university like Desmond Ritter has.
All right, look at that. Everyone really is saying nice things today. I could say something legitimately nice about, like, Malik Cunningham, the Louisville quarterback who had 5 touchdowns passing and 2 rushing. But he was playing Duke, so really, what does that mean? I could say something nice about...
He almost talked himself into that one.
Pat almost did yeah, last week.
Yeah, right.
I could say something nice about UT San Antonio, UTSA. Meep, meep, that's what they're all calling them, the Roadrunners. He scored with 3 seconds left. QB Frank Harris to tight end Oscar Cardenas right at the end. They're still undefeated. The Alamo Bowl was rolling. San Antonio's behind their team. I could say all that, but they beat UAB. I mean, how exciting that. I could say something nice about Jim Harbaugh. He got them to 10-1. Man, he was on the hot seat. He's going into the Buckeye game. Hell, the best thing to happen to him was they crushed Michigan State. Everyone's like, well, probably not going to win. Expectations are now kind of low. All the Michigan fans are trying to talk themselves into it, but we don't know. But, yeah, hey, who wants to say something nice about Jim Harbaugh?
What are you getting to, Dan?
I don't know. I could say, you know what? Here's what I'm going to say something nice about. I'm going to say something nice about Florida State. Florida State Seminoles started the season 0-4. Had another midseason swoon where they lost 2 more. They're 5-6. There's nothing to crow about, especially not when you're the Seminoles. But you know what they didn't do? Quit. Team didn't quit. Mike Norvell's team has not quit. They win. They beat Miami by 3. They go up to Boston College and win by 3. They have salvaged some sense of a season here. They're going to get to play Florida at Florida. They could get to 6. They could get a bowl. Norvell's going to be the longest tenured major college coach in the state. It depends what you want to write. He's even been there longer than Gus. Didn't quit like Florida. Quit on their coach.
Yeah.
Didn't quit like Texas. Has mustered nothing in defense of their coach. Most embarrassing season you got. Goes to West Virginia. And didn't quit like a lot of people. So I'm going to say something nice about Florida State. Good job not quitting like all the other suckers out there quit.
that's the podcast ethos.
A little more, like, right?
Someone smash about 3 different people on your way to a slight back pat of somewhere.
What the hell got into you guys? It's like you're all in the holiday spirit and everyone's getting nice.
That's it.
This is Egg Bowl week.
Kids home for the week. You know, I'm feeling happy and joyful and... Yeah, sorry.
You're gonna stop listening if you're happy and joyful. Pat,
I know,
right?
I know. Don't worry. I'll be back to hateful by Tuesday.
You threatened homicide last week on the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? We have an audience to feed.
Oh, we have an update on that. We have an update. Oh. The guy did an interview with the Texas Monthly, which I actually subscribe to. Great magazine, not just for the barbecue reviews. They get right to anything in Texas. There it was. He said the problem they could not solve, which we were hoping was something really interesting. It turned out to be like an IT problem at work.
Oh, so, Lord.
Yeah, terribly boring. And then he tried to defend himself against all the mean critics by saying he was trying to be positive, but that really wasn't the issue. It wasn't trying to be positive. It was that, I don't want to set Pat
nothing
off.
Nothing against our IT brethren out there. I'm sure some of them listen to the pod, and we appreciate that. But why the hell is an IT guy doing interviews? Get him out. Get him out of the interview room.
No,
Get him out of the press conference.
He used to be an IT guy. He changed careers. Okay.
Well, he should go back to being an IT guy.
That's the Pat Forty that our listeners know and love.
See, I just had to poke the bear. You just got to poke the bear.
Holiday spirit, holiday schmear it.
That's a Egg Bowl week, baby.
It's rivalry week, Pat. It's Egg Bowl week.
It is.
I want the hate flowing on Tuesday. I want the hate flowing. I don't want you thinking about this. Stuffing and turkey bowl games and having your sons around, all this stuff. I want the hate. You better bring the hate on Tuesday.
All right. I'll do better on Tuesday.
Okay. Are you going to quit like a Longhorn or are you going to buck up like a Seminole? That's the question, Pat Forty.
Sully, send him that clip of the Texas reporter asking the question like 10 minutes before. Just play it on a loop. We want you frothing. We want you ready to go.
That's a good game. good pregame.
It is rivalry week. And we will be back Tuesday to discuss it all. It's so great. It's so great. So great. It sucks that the season ends, but it does end with some greatness. So let's do it. Talk to you all then.